From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made around 2001 when a Cornell University graduate was pursuing a career in acting. Tom Campbell was living in Chicago, working as an assistant paralegal and acting in late night shows, as he tells it, and he had a conversation with his father that changed his career. No, it was not based on advice on how to succeed in acting. Instead, T. Colin Campbell wanted some help. He was writing a book about his work in nutritional research, and he asked Tom to assist him. The plan was to spend a year on the book, and Tom could get back to acting. 1 year became four of research and writing, and finally, in 2005, The China Study was published. It has sold more than 1 million copies in a decade. Tom was the co-author, and his career path had moved from nutrition and medicine, much like his father. Now, at the time, whole food, plant-based diets were not all that mainstream, I think it's fair to say, and today they're much more common, if not widely adopted, and Tom Campbell has just released a second book on the subject. He's working with his wife, with UR Medicine Primary Care, in launching a new nutrition program, and it is, as far as I can tell, the first such program in our region to be backed by a major health system. This hour, we're talking about the program, the book, and the mainstreaming of plant-based diets. My guests include Dr. Tom Campbell, author of The Campbell Plan, The Simple Way to Lose Weight and Reverse Illness Using the China Study's Whole Food Plant-Based Diet. Nice to have you, Dr. Campbell.
Appreciate it.
Also here is Dr. Aaron Campbell, helping lead the new program through UR Medicine Primary Care. Dr. Campbell, nice to have you.
Yep, great to be here.
And a couple of folks who can offer a little bit of their own testimony as to how it has impacted them. Ed Ehlers is here. Nice to have you, Ed.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And Jim Vangelo is here. Nice to have you, Jim.
Thank you.
Well, I suspect that you don't think about acting too much anymore, do you, Tom?
You could argue that I still use a lot of the skills I learned in my training now as a physician.
Yeah, a little public speaking.
A little public speaking.
Sure, absolutely. Now, UR Medicine Primary Care is essentially endorsing this approach, this program. And I'm curious to know what our doctors think, what it means to have a major health system endorsing, rolling out this kind of support for a project. I haven't seen this kind of major health system support for this approach yet.
Right. I think it's a big deal. I mean, from writing the China Study and being involved in whole food plant-based nutrition, I can tell you that there's a very passionate, avid niche of the population that is sort of rabid about this idea and very advocates for this idea. But there's a big gulf between popular nutrition and that sort of niche population and institutional medicine, a huge gulf. And ever since becoming a doctor and going through medical education with almost no nutrition training and practicing in the standard traditional environment, I've been acutely aware of that gulf. And so having a major academic medical center say, hey, you know, food can and should be medicine, and let's give it a shot, is a really big deal. It's not just a research or an education initiative. It's actually a patient care initiative as part of our primary care system. So we're very excited about it. We're just getting it off the ground now, and we're hoping that it can be a leader, not just for our region, but actually nationally, as to how other hospital systems might do this.
Dr. Aaron Campbell, you just heard your husband use the term food as medicine. How do you describe that? When people say, well, what do you mean food is medicine?
So there's a lot of different perceptions out there about what, you know, is a healthy diet and what is the best diet. And there's certainly, I think, the attitude out there in the public that, you know, having less processed food is certainly good. But our approach to that is a little bit different in that it's the whole food plant-based diet. So it's eating, you know, almost exclusively plant foods and plant foods that are, you know, close to the way that they're provided in nature. So it, you know, it can be, you know, kind of changed in a way that, you know, for instance, 100% whole wheat pasta, you know, it's not exactly the way it started, but it's still pretty minimally processed. But also things like, you know, fruits, vegetables, you know, closer to their whole form. And it's a little bit different, you know, perspective than I think what most people think about as being healthy in terms of, you know, just kind of the general perception of what is a healthy diet. Most people tend to think of it in a more moderate way, but there's certainly evidence that changing your diet in a bigger way is going to have a greater impact on your health.
So let's talk about the program. And your first round, as I understand it, booked up, but you are accepting applicants for your October 27th through December 17th 8-week program. So Dr. Tom Campbell, what is it? Tell us about the program.
We have an 8-week, what we call 8-week lifestyle intensive. And you know, you can go visit your doctor and you might get the message, you know, you need to lose weight. And then the conversation's over and you leave the office and you say, well, what the heck am I going to do now? Right. So this is a very comprehensive, practical, hand-holding approach to help people really comprehensively change their lifestyle, their diet, to regain their health, treat illness. And so we're giving people 8 weeks of physician-guided small group sessions, two sessions a week where they get a membership to all the YMCAs in the area. We're going to have guest chefs from the New York State Wine and Culinary Center provide some expert cooking instruction, some guest experts, exercise physiologists, and we're really gonna use group support and social factors as well as, you know, our cognitive educational component to help people become motivated to do this and then give them the skills to do it. So it's a comprehensive program.
For our listeners, I promise we will take your calls and questions on these issues. I see the phone's ringing already. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. The website, if you want to register, sign up for what they're doing, especially for that next 8-week program that starts October 27th, it's urnutritioninmedicine.com. urnutritioninmedicine.com. And so you've given us a little bit of a brief outline here, but what's the actual time commitment on a weekly basis then?
It would be 3 hours for the group meetings, over 2 meetings per week.
2 meetings per week. Yeah. So 6 hours a week.
No, sorry. It's 1.5 hours per meeting.
Oh, so okay.
Right now we're scheduling at 1.5 hours on Tuesday evening, 1.5 hours on Thursday evening.
Okay. And that's going to encompass a lot of different things. When we talk about weight loss, you know, I'm certainly not the doctor in the room, but a lot of what I have read recently is a little discouraging to me as a runner, which said, because I always say, well, I run to eat. But what I've read recently is the research indicates, yes, exercise is very important, but if you want to lose weight or stay fit, eating is more important than exercise. That's what I have read. I don't know if the research that you've seen supports it. It's not saying that exercise is not important, but it's saying what you put into your body is the single most important thing. Yes, right. Or no?
I agree with that. I think it's hard to come up with a perfect research study that is going to disentangle exactly which percentage is exercise, which percentage is diet. Clearly, both are beneficial, and I recommend people do both. But you cannot outrun a bad diet. And even if you are exercising well and you're maintaining a healthy weight, it doesn't mean, for example, that you're not building up plaque in your arteries and getting progressive heart disease. So, you know, there are health problems beyond weight, and I think diet has a broad effect on not just weight, but also your blood vessel health, your heart health, and I don't think exercise alone cuts it.
And Jake writes to us on the question of nutrition then that our doctors, I hope, can answer. He says, early on in the vegan movement, the big problem, real or perceived, was vitamin deficiency and lack of minerals. Could your guest talk a little bit about that? Is it still a common perception, the image of an anemic stick person associated with plant-based diets? What about the nutrition of it? Doctors?
It's absolutely still a common perception that I work against. I try to stay away from the V words, the vegan, vegetarian words, because
your dad didn't use vegan, right?
Right.
99% vegan, but not categorically vegan.
Right. We made a conscious choice to use the terms whole food plant-based nutrition, that whole food plant-based, because you can have a very poor vegan diet and a very poor vegetarian diet. And it's important that you have unrefined foods. And so if you're having a wide variety of unrefined plant foods, I mean, this idea that you're going to be deficient is simply not borne out. I mean, just some simple calculations about, for example, the protein content of whole plant foods or the calcium content, the iron content, you know, some of these common things, you quickly realize that these are the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. Whole plants are in whole plants. So yes, it's a common perception, but that's becoming, I think, kind of a little bit of an older a little bit outmoded, thankfully.
Okay, well then let me ask Doctors Tom and Aaron Campbell then. We always like to put our doctors on the spot when we talk about plant-based diets. What'd you eat last night? You know, we want to know what kind of meals are common. And to Jake's question on making sure what we do eat is well-rounded, that's a good question. So what's a kind of an average meal?
Okay, so what we had last night, so we had 100% whole wheat pasta with tomato sauce, kale, and white beans. And it was just a very, you know, simple, busy weeknight dinner. And I'd say there's a good amount of variety in terms of what we eat. You know, we might make a lasagna, which is made with like a tofu and spinach filling. We might have something like a stir fry. There's a pretty good amount of variety in terms of the different things that we eat. Sometimes I make homemade Indian food. So there's a lot of different, you know, things that you can kind of fit into a whole food plant-based diet. I would say, that there, I mean, you certainly can adjust it to your taste preferences, which is something that, you know, we do aim to do with our program too, that you don't have to necessarily eat one specific thing. I think in terms of having it be well-rounded, it is important to think about, you know, not falling into eating too many processed foods. So we do try to avoid those. So, you know, like there's a lot of products now that if you go into a natural food store or the natural section of the grocery store, you can get a ton of faux meat products, mm-hmm. also things like vegan cheeses, which I think is our other reason that we tend not to really qualify foods as being vegan, because it doesn't necessarily mean healthy. There are things like fast food French fries that technically are vegan, but it's not something that
right,
we promote
right.
Now, the consumption of.
It's an interesting term, fast food, because what I have often encountered when I talk to people who switch to a plant-based and whole foods lifestyle is that you have to be a little bit more prepared going out the door, that you have fewer options when you're on the move during a busy workday. And Dr. Campbell, I see you nodding. Is that, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think you settle into a new patterns, but it takes time to get there. So anybody looking at transition, you know, that social aspect of what do you eat, you know, who are you eating it with, how do you prepare, what do you plan, you become very cognizant of those issues and decisions. Whereas, you know, if you just continue how you've been eating for the past 10 years, all those decisions and thoughts are well past mm-hmm. you. You know, you don't think about those things anymore. So when people are changing, you do have to put some planning and time in. But once you do that for a few months, I think you adapt to some new normals, some new staple foods, some new restaurant options, some new quick and convenient dinners, you know, one pot meals. And it's not as onerous as people might imagine.
Before I bring in Ed and Jim to talk about their own experiences, Keith wanted to weigh in with a question. Go ahead, Keith.
I got a question, or maybe a suggestion or something similar. What I'd like to see is maybe a hospital get 300 people. You divide them into a group of 100, get all their vitals, get all their blood work, blood chemistry, and then say for 60 days, they have one group eat whatever they want, exercise whatever they want. They have another group eat a well-balanced diet, and you could see I'm using air quotes, and exercise maybe on a regimen. And then they have a third group eat the plant-based or the diet of the day, just so you can actually say after 100 days, for example, the people who ate ever they want, their BG levels went up or down. Just so there's some empirical data, comparative data that you can use. Now, again, 100 people may not be a good enough cross-section because you got different ages and you got different health styles going in. But it just might be a start. So maybe we can, as a society, come to the conclusion as to what is best. And I'm a firm believer that, you know, you can eat anything as long as it's in moderation, and you need some exercise, and you can't eat more calories than you need because you will gain weight, and it doesn't matter what they are.
Keith, thanks for the call. And it's important to remember here, Dr. Tom Campbell, working with T. Colin Campbell and the China study, I mean, research was at the core of it. So let's talk a little bit about what you have found mm-hmm. in your own research, in the book from 10 years ago, and your work now. Tell us about what we have learned about this.
Well, there's more research than many people are aware. There's actually a great depth and breadth of research showing that nutrition can not only prevent illness, diet and lifestyle, but also treat illness. And so the type of study that was just described, I mean, there have been studies that were done similar to this. If you look at Dr. Dean Ornish's pioneering work, for example, gosh, 20 years ago or more at this point, 20, 30 years ago, he was taking a smaller group, not 100, but a smaller group of patients and putting with advanced heart disease. And he put one group in sort of standard care, just the standard dietary recommendations, eat a balanced, moderate diet. He put another group on a almost totally plant-based, low-fat diet with exercise, stress reduction, and group support. And what he found was that the people who were on the diet and lifestyle, and mind you, with no medications, were able to actually reverse their illness using high-tech measures. So they were looking by X-ray technology, basically, angiograms, looking at the blockage in these patients' hearts and finding that their heart lesions, their blockages in their heart arteries were actually shrinking just from the diet and lifestyle approach. The control group, who was getting the standard sort of diet, moderation, diet and lifestyle, American Heart Association type of moderate approach, saw a progression of their heart disease over time. And he carried those results on from 1 year out and then published 5-year results and found that the benefits continued to accumulate over time. We've also seen research in diabetes, for example, that comparing a vegan diet, again, the V word, but a vegan diet with the American Diabetes Association diet, sort of the standard counting carbohydrates kind of approach compared with a vegan diet. The vegan diet just as well or better, and people actually adhere to it just as well or better than the ADA diet. So that's just a tiny, tiny sliver, just this the tiniest topping on what's incredible depth and breadth of the research supporting. And there have been more clinical trials, I think, than many people are aware. Certainly, there are lots of areas where we need more research, though. So I agree with that statement.
I think for our listeners who are not intimately familiar with the China study, I'd like to just bring up a few of the pegs that really stand out. And certainly, doctors, feel free to correct me where I'm wrong. But, for example, people talk about genes. They talk about hereditary. You know, I know that I'm going to be overweight. My family, it's in our family. I know I'm going to be more prone to diabetes, cancer, et cetera. And one of the indications is that genes don't determine disease on their own. Mm-hmm. They have to be essentially activated by, and diet helps activate them. Is that right?
Right. And genetic genes matter. I mean, I'm not one to say that genes don't matter, but
right.
We have now very compelling evidence that genetic expression can be altered by our diet and lifestyle. And so, again, actually, Dr. Dean Ornish, more recently, 10 years ago, did a study of early-stage prostate cancer, men with early-stage prostate cancer, put them on the heart disease reversal plan, for to see what effect it had on prostate cancer, and then put the other group on sort of average standard care, and found not only that their prostate cancer was potentially halted or reversed after 1 year, he actually did some interesting ancillary studies looking at gene expression and finding that the gene expression of the people on the diet and lifestyle plan was dramatically different. The anti-cancer genes were turned on in the diet and lifestyle group, and the pro-cancer genes were turned off in the diet and lifestyle group. So there's compelling evidence that diet and lifestyle have an important effect on our gene expression. That's not to say genes don't matter. I like the expression, genes load the gun, diet and lifestyle pulls the trigger.
And when it comes to not just preventing disease, but actually treating it with food, treating it with what we eat, with diet. Yes, that what we're talking about today is that the same nutrition that prevents disease in the early stages can halt or reverse it. That's a remarkable comment.
It is, and there's good evidence, again, more than probably most people realize, because unfortunately we don't communicate this very well to most of the population, but for metabolic disease in particular, diabetes, heart disease, weight, and cardiovascular disease risk factors like high blood pressure and high cholesterol, these things can respond quite rapidly to diet and lifestyle interventions. So, you know, the heart disease model in particular, I think the president of the American College of Cardiology came out, you know, espousing a totally plant-based diet. And it's because of the depth and breadth of evidence when you start looking at it, it becomes very compelling that this is not only just prevention, but actually treatment.
Here's another couple planks that stand out from their work. There are virtually no nutrients in animal-based foods that are not better provided by plants, and vitamin supplements are not a panacea for good health.
Yeah, unfortunately, many people think nutrition, and they start venturing into the realm of alternative medicine and vitamin shops and supplement shops. And you know, that's really not what we're talking about. We're talking about whole food, getting what you need to from food. The only exception, of course, for plant-based diets is B12. You know, that is something that people should supplement with. And in our part of the country, sometimes I recommend a vitamin D as well.
Okay. We're talking to Drs. Tom and Aaron Campbell, and we're talking about their new program through UR Medicine. You can find more information at urnutritioninmedicine.com. It's an 8-week program that introduces and helps people adjust to whole food plant-based diet. We didn't say vegan. It's whole food plant-based diet. You can sign up for the second round. The second round starts at the end of October, and it goes through mid-December. You can sign up now, urnutritioninmedicine.com. The first group program is full. It starts in a couple of weeks, but they'll be doing a second one starting at the end of October, and that's where to find it. You can also find the Campbell Plan. Where can people find the Campbell Plan, Dr. Campbell?
Anywhere books are sold.
The Campbell Plan, the simple way to lose weight and reverse illness using the China Studies whole food plant-based diet. And Ed Ehlers and Jim Vangelo can probably tell us a little bit about that. Ed, what's your story? They brought you here for a reason.
Well, I've had heart disease since 1987. And in 1995, I read Dean Ornish's book, Reversing Heart Disease Without Drugs or Surgery. And like most people, I thought I could never follow the diet. I went to a retreat in California, and after about 4 days, I became a believer and decided I was going to give it a shot. So I've been on the program since 1995. And I took a chance recently. I asked my cardiologist, if I was not on the program, what's the probability right now that I'd be either dead or incapacitated? And doctors don't like to answer that question. but finally, he did. He said, I'd put it at 50% that I'd be dead or incapacitated. And then I went on to ask my GP, and he thought it really was closer to 80%. So I really feel, and I changed GPs to Dr. Campbell, and he also said 80%. And I genuinely believe if I wasn't on the program, I'd be dead or incapacitated.
How do you feel?
Feel great.
How quickly did you see a difference?
As Tom said, in the first few weeks, I started losing weight. In fact, I started losing weight so fast I was scared. I didn't know what was happening to me.
Did you have any withdrawal of foods that you were used to, sort of the comfort foods, sugar, things like that?
Well, I'm not as good as I could be with sugar, to be honest. But I think the overall benefits, my diet, I'm sure, is probably in the top 1% in terms of health. And I don't think you have to go all the way. You know, I think if you went plant-based, whole foods, as Tom is saying, you know, it's definitely going to help you.
See, before the program began, I told the doctors, I follow the Michael Pollan creed, eat food, not too much, mostly plants. And I've had vegan friends say, not mostly plants, all plants. And, you know, there's no such thing as an almost vegan diet. But what you're saying, Ed, is that that you've moved a long way in the whole food, plant-based direction. What did you eat for dinner last night?
Actually, I went to a Flash soccer game, and I brought a sandwich with me. I actually had to sneak it in because you can't.
That's right. Is there any whole food plant-based stands at the? I'm looking at Frontier Field across the way. Dan Mason, are you listening?
But what it was a hummus sandwich with tomato and lots of spinach, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, for people who think that it's bland, is there anything more flavorful than the bizarrely misshapen, beautiful tomatoes that we can find at our farmer stands this time? They're the best. They are. Right. I love stopping on the way home and just getting one of those freakish-looking things that looks like a misshapen softball with four different colors, and just cutting it and just putting a little cracked pepper on that, maybe a little olive oil. Is that allowed? Is that all right?
No. We're going for no oils.
No oils. Yeah. Okay, well, a little cracked pepper then?
Yeah, a little cracked pepper.
Okay, see? That's all right. It's a great time here. Look at, I already got corrected by the doctor. I'm sorry about that, Dr. Kim. Here I was thinking I'm on my way. Jim Vangelo, what's your story?
In 2008, my wife, Lori, was diagnosed with lymphoma. At the time, my daughter was working at the library, so she brought home the China study. And I do have to thank my daughter for bringing that book home. But at that time, my wife said, let's start, you know, trying a whole foods plant-based diet. It took us a while. Like I said, in 08, she was diagnosed. But eventually, you know, I have to give the credit to my wife for actually turning the whole family around, not just her. But she does want to keep her cancer at bay, which she has been doing. And also for myself, I've been on statins forever, and I wanted to get off statins. And finally, after meeting Dr. Campbell, he did allow me to at least get off of statins, which is great. And now Dr. Campbell does say I have to stay with the whole foods plant-based. I can't cheat. I can't have my piece of pizza once in a while or anything like that. But I am doing my best to keep a whole foods plant-based diet.
What do you miss the most?
I do miss my pizza.
Do you start to miss it less over time?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And then, once in a while they tell me, "Oh, it's a healthy pizza. It's a vegetable pizza, you know." But still, we still have some of the oils in there that I'm not supposed to have.
Okay. And what do you enjoy? What's a go-to kind of a meal for you?
Let me tell you my lunch, because I have to give my wife does the bulk of the cooking. I'm not a good cook, but for lunch, let's say it's my refried bean sandwich with lettuce, and then my wife makes a delicious I call it date paste, but it's mainly cocoa and dates, so that's my other sandwich.
Dr. Campbell, we're talking about getting off statins, and we're talking about cancer, and this is for anybody in the audience hearing this with doubts about this, I mean, these are very important and strong and highly impactful comments, and mm-hmm. this is an area that impacts just about anybody who will ever live in this country, unfortunately. So I know that you've thought long and hard about presenting these kind of comments to people mm-hmm. without overselling it, right?
Right. Well, I think cancer is one of those areas we need more research. Mm-hmm. I think that there is incredible, I would call it indirect evidence, that diet matters a great deal for cancer, not only in preventing cancer in terms of maintaining a healthy weight, you know, physical activity, all these things are linked to lower cancer rates, but potentially even treating cancer and improving survival and reducing recurrence. And we have some evidence from that small trial of early prostate cancer, a clinical trial in humans that supports this idea. We also have, a pretty powerful set of animal data, animal experiments showing that diet can actually strongly impact the growth of cancer cells. And I think when you look at the indirect evidence, it becomes very compelling. But what we're missing is, you know, we've done some of the there have been studies, there have been large clinical trials in humans on cancer recurrence once it's diagnosed, and they've been disappointing, to be honest. I think that what they've shown, the Women's Health Initiative, a couple of the other large breast cancer trials, what they've shown is that small changes or temporary changes, you know, if you eat more fruits and vegetables for just a year and then you kind of slide back, probably are not changes that are going to make a huge difference in recurrence rates or survival from cancer. So, but what we don't have is a more comprehensive diet and lifestyle approach in terms of treatment. So, powerful indirect evidence, but I think cancer is one area where I'd love to see more research.
Rich in Rochester. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, the doctor touched on my concern. My concern is this possible strong evidence, what we've seen in animal trials, and I've heard this the last 40 years of my life. I've heard so many studies come out with those type of statements just to fall, to end up being totally invalidated when it comes to the human population. I think we want to find these magic bullets to make it easy, and I understand that this gentleman's wife, and I'm so happy that she's doing better, but to sell it as something that her diet did, or, you know, past the treatments of what the doctor did, it's a very dangerous thing. And I think we need to stop parsing our words and say there's no evidence of this. Because you end up with, when you parse your words, people will hear part of what you want to say, and they will go out there. And I hate to bring up the example, but Steve Jobs is dead today because of that type of treatment for himself as far as cancer. And I don't think we take things like cancer that are things like that, that we have no evidence that just the diet cures it or keeps it away. I don't think we say that until we know, because you can't have people taking these chances, because people will do it. And that's a huge concern of mine.
Rich, thank you for the phone call. Dr. Campbell.
I think we do have to be conservative about how we talk about cancer. There's no doubt about that. I would never tell someone, for example, to ignore traditional treatments, to just start eating carrots. But I don't think, the statement that there is no evidence, I simply don't agree with that. There's more evidence than most people are aware of, including the human trial, looking at early-stage prostate cancer that Dr. Dean Ornish did, and very powerful animal experiments. You can't just sort of throw all those out and say those are not valid. So I think that there's more evidence than people are aware, but I totally agree that we need to be conservative.
And to Rich's point, and we can stress it again, you just heard Dr. Campbell say it, no one is saying, if you get cancer, just change what you're eating and it will go away.
Right.
You are not saying treatment, traditional cancer treatment, is not necessary.
No. And I think, there's sort of a hint of like, you're leading people astray, or this is dangerous. And the evidence suggests that if you do try it, whether it helps your cancer or not, the side effects are, weight loss, lower blood pressure, lower blood cholesterol, less risk of heart disease. So, this is not unlike some of our traditional treatments, our chemotherapies and stuff, the side effects here are good for this. So I don't think we need to be, holding our tongues when we advise that people adopt a healthier diet and lifestyle.
We have about 20 minutes left. I've got to get a short break in here, and we're coming right back in about 50 seconds with a pile of your questions that have come in online and more about the program that UR Nutrition in Medicine is launching. You can check out at urnutritioninmedicine.com. Doctors Tom and Aaron Campbell are leading this new program, and there are slots open for the 8-week program starting at the end of October. You can find that now. His new book is available, The Campbell Plan, The Simple Way to Lose Weight and Reverse Illness Using the China Studies Whole Food Plant-Based Diet. Again, that is now available. We'll even talk a little bit about their monthly seminars and all that coming up next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we wrap up our month-long coverage of heroin and opioid addiction. My colleague Michelle Faust joins us, and we're talking about the impact on families, the impact on people trying to help those who are addicted. A broad-ranging discussion both hours. We hope you'll join us Friday on Connections.
Throughout his life, actor Marlon Brando made hundreds of hours of personal audio recordings, including self-hypnosis tapes.
Marlon, listen to my voice. Just let go.
A new documentary explores Marlon Brando in his own words. Listen to me, Marlon, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, along with Drs. Tom and Aaron Campbell. Ed Ehlers and Jim Vangelo are here sharing their personal stories. And Jim, I just wanted you briefly to react to Rich's call, his concern about overselling the effects of a plant-based diet. What did you think?
Yeah, Rich, my wife back in 2008, I had lymphoma. the type of lymphoma she has is the kind you manage. You don't, you know, totally remove it. You know, it's supposed to reoccur every 4 years. Now, it's been 7 years, and my wife is elated that she at least has held back possibly that second round of treatment she was supposed to get in 4 years. I know this is only my wife, and it's only one person here, but just the whole food plant-based diet, my wife feels very strongly. I'm sad in my neighborhood, everyone on my street has cancer. My wife is not a doctor like Dr. Campbell, but she is a nurse. She feels like for her friend's stage one breast cancer, if they would just consider the whole food plant-based diet, that would be at least something viable versus the other alternatives that her friends have chosen. Again, I still feel, you know, the cancer doctors still know a lot more than I do, but the whole food plant-based is still something they need to be aware of and need to consider.
David on Twitter says, "Hey, Evan Dawson, whatever happened to just everything in moderation? I'm going to McCann's Local Meats later to spite this episode." All right, Drs. Campbell, you want to respond to his, whatever happened to everything in moderation?
Well, you know, people, us as, here's the thing that makes nutrition a little bit tricky. I mean, you can have everything in moderation, and your individual life trajectory may be just peachy keen. I mean, you might live to be 105 and have pretty good health throughout, or you might have the very standard American set of ailments like cardiovascular disease or a relatively common cancer, colorectal cancer, you know. So you're have some dice in your hands and you're kind of throwing the dice. And, you know, what odds do you want to have? And if you look at the breadth and depth of evidence, I think you have the best odds at a more plant-based diet. So getting rid of the moderation and going to a more simple plant-based diet. So, you know, what kind of life are you going to have if you don't do that? No one can say. We don't have control over our destinies, but I think that moderation, for example, leads to moderate amount of heart attacks. It's linked to a moderate amount of death from heart disease. And if you look at Mediterranean diets, for example, which is a moderate plant-based diet, which has sort of everything, you look at the rates of heart disease or you look at the treatment of heart disease, it's not as profound or as impressive as those people who are going totally plant-based. So it's the trickiness of nutrition. There's clearly some gray zones a lot around the edges here, but I think moderation is a dangerous, slippery slope.
Brianna writes to the program and says that she loves to make fruit and plant smoothies at home, but is she losing nutrients when she blends them up?
I'm not aware that you're losing any nutrients, but your body does interact with blended foods differently. There was a study a while ago looking at smoothies or blended foods and finding that they were absorbed quicker, so you had a faster and higher sugar spike with blended foods, and you weren't as satisfied. And from a hunger point of view, your hunger was not satisfied as long as it would be if you consume the same foods whole. So if you have a smoothie in the morning with three bananas and two oranges, in a very simple way, you're not going to be as full as long as if you just ate three bananas and two oranges, most likely.
Okay. Monica writes to the program, "I would love to do a plant-based diet, but I developed food allergies 5 years ago, and I can no longer eat legumes, beans, peas, soy, and tree nuts. The plant-based diets all seem heavily focused on beans as the protein source. Although limited in choices, is it still possible to be successful with your program?" She's talking to the doctors. Thank you, Monica. Drs. Campbell on that?
Yeah, I think it's possible, but beans are a staple for sure. Looking at the blue zones around the world, for example, and healthy plant-based diets, the beans are sort of staples for many cultures around the world. But you can do it. You know, I think food allergies are tough to deal with, but you can do it. Makes it difficult. You know, no beans would be difficult, but yeah, you can do it.
What would be an approach to help sort of replace?
Well, there's protein. For example, people think of beans for their protein content, but there's protein in all plant foods, so you don't really need to worry about that. I mean, you can whole grains have protein, and they're also known for fiber. And again, all whole plants have lots of fiber. So I don't know that there's anything unique that you must get from beans from a nutritional point of view, but just from a practical point of view, beans are very filling and easy. You know, so it's more of the convenience factor.
Yeah. Let me get back to the phones and get Kathy on the program. Go ahead, Kathy.
Go ahead. Yep. I just want to attest to the health of this kind of a diet because years ago we went on the Dean Ornish plan, my husband, myself, and my mom. And my mom, she was 85 at the time, and she had 85 to 90% blockage in her right carotid artery, and she didn't want to have an operation, although all the doctors wanted her to have one. But we kept her stable for like 5 years. And although she did have a mild stroke when she was 90, so that's 5 years later, they added physical therapy into her daily routine, which she didn't do any exercise. I didn't expect her at 85 to, you know, be doing exercise, which is part of the Dean Ornish plan. And it's also, I hear, part of Dr. Campbell's plan. And within 6 months, with a little bit of therapy, sitting down, mind you, most of the time, except walking with her walker a few times back and forth across her room, she lowered her blockage from 85 to 90% to 50 to 60%. And the force of the blood that had to go through her carotid artery went from 430 cubic centimeters per second to less than half, like 180 cubic centimeters per second. The doctor, the vascular doctor, after she had her ultrasound, came in, and he was looking at her neck to see where the scars were. Did she have surgery? And I said, no, of course, she doesn't want surgery. And he said he's never seen anything like it. Within 6 months, at 90 years old, 20 minutes of exercise a day. And I just wanted to say that.
Thank you for the phone call, Kathy. This is where the host has to step in and say, that is a remarkable story. It's not a scientific study. It's one anecdote. But Dr. Campbell does that. Is that a validation? Do you say, you know, there's a lot we don't know about that, or does that to you speak to sort of the evidence you're looking for?
Well, again, I think when you're looking at cardiovascular disease in particular and atherosclerosis, the buildup of that plaque and all the vessels, you know, ranging from, okay, impotence to heart disease to the vessels in your heart, your lower legs, or your neck, I think that the evidence is now strong and deep that diet and lifestyle has a major impact on this. And even if it doesn't shrink it, it can halt the progression by simply changing diet and lifestyle.
Pete says, this is a great time of year to be eating fruits and vegetables, but what on earth do your panelists eat in the winter? Well, let's go around. Let's start with you, Ed. What do you eat in the winter?
Well, I go to Florida, so that helps a lot. But I think I think I'd be eating the same foods even if I was in Rochester.
Jim, do you go to Florida, Jim?
No, I don't go to Florida. I'm here year-round. But I have to admit, during the summer season, we do have a lot more available. But we can still find everything available we need throughout the year, the other part, the cold times of the year.
What do you primarily, what comes to mind for more of a winter staple for you?
Well, let's say the potato soup, or I mean, it's again. I really, there's not a big difference in my household. I mean, we do make it work all year. Just saying, we have a lot. You know, it's nice to have the fresh vegetables in this time of year.
Dr. Aaron Campbell,
I would say we have more pot foods in the wintertime. You know, more things like stews, a nice pot of minestrone soup. So it just kind of changes a little bit, you know, like this time of year when it's 90 degrees out, you don't necessarily want to eat those things. So there's a little bit of a shift, at least in our house, towards eating more salads and things that are grilled, things like that.
Okay. All right. So to Brian's question there, or I'm sorry, to Pete there, not impossible, Pete, is what the panel is saying to you, even though Ed chickens out and goes to Florida. let me get back to the phones and Colin in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Colin.
Hi, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
So it's a kind of related story. My brother, when we were younger, had two pet rats, and one of them developed a tumor on its back the size of a ping pong ball or so, and we decided to let it go in the woods behind our house so it could, you know, wander off in the woods and die a natural death. Instead of doing that, it stayed living behind our house and started eating the foods that a rat would naturally eat outdoors, and the tumor completely went away and healed up like nothing had ever happened.
You're really are we stretching the pin at all on the plant base now? That's
I'm not going to use that as evidence anytime soon.
Yeah, but, well, obviously it's not any kind of scientific experiment, but it amazed me that the rat that we were sure was going to die healed up and lived 2 years behind our house.
You never know, Colin. That is a fascinating story. I appreciate it. Yeah, maybe it doesn't quite rise to the level of a scientific inquiry, but this is Andy in Rochester. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi. Yeah, great show. I've been a vegan for 14 years, or plant-based diet, but I don't mind using the word vegan. And I hadn't had health care as an adult the whole time, so I'd never been to a doctor since I was 18. But I became a vegan for cruelty reasons to animals, and I didn't really know the health aspects of it. And then about 5 years ago, I'm a veteran. I signed up for the VA healthcare, and for the first time in all those years, 25 years, I had a physical, complete physical. And when I went in for my consultation with my doctor, he sat in front of me and sat back, and he says, "You are the healthiest veteran I've ever had as a patient." And I said, "Well, I'm a vegan," and that blew his mind. So that's all I wanted to say about that, and I think it's the best thing I've ever done, take my health into my own hands.
Andy, thanks for the phone call. Dr. Scammell, you want to weigh in on that?
It's remarkable how powerful diet and lifestyle is, and the evidence is there. We just need to share it a little bit better, and it's not a magic bullet. It's not a magic pill. I'm not suggesting that everyone is going to have perfect health for the rest of their life. You sort of get that religious flavor to it sometimes, but from a conservative science point of view, this is a very, very important message. And it's stories like this are become quite common.
Dr. Tom Campbell's book is The Campbell Plan, The Simple Way to Lose Weight and Reverse Illness Using the China Study's Whole Food Plant-Based Diet. It's now available. Also now available is signing up for Drs. Tom and Aaron Campbell's new program through UR Nutrition. And you can do that at urnutritionandmedicine.com. 8-week program. They're asking for 90 minutes twice a week, so 3 hours a week. And they'll essentially take you through cooking demonstrations, a lifestyle, and changes in adapting to a new whole food plant-based lifestyle. And then there's the question of the monthly seminars. And I wanted to ask Tom briefly to tell us about Lunch with Docs. Is that what you call it?
Yeah, Lunch with Docs, us being the docs. We have a catered lunch provided with optimal food. And that's always, I think, as important as all the blabbing I do during a lecture, you know, is people actually tasting the food and being like, hey, you know what, this is actually tasty food. But we'll have a seminar once a month, and we're going to be exploring a variety of topics, going over some of the science, as well as some of the practical aspects during that session.
Ed, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, I'd like to point out that the Lunch with Docs only costs $10. So how could you possibly go wrong getting a meal and information at the same time?
Right. $10, and how do people do that, Dr. Campbell?
Through our website, because it's catered, we do need RSVPs for the meal.
Okay, and the website? Same one?
Yep, urnutritionandmedicine.com.
urnutritionandmedicine.com. The last question I'll grab from a listener comes in regards to whether these kind of programs are out of reach for people who are low income. And I think that's a good question, because we know studies show that people in poverty, people in lower income, are more likely to have poor diet, poor nutrition. It's certainly a risk for kids. And is this something that is in reach for them, Dr. Campbell?
Unfortunately, to be totally honest, it's not. People on fixed incomes who worry about copays, $20 copay and being able to afford that, they can't afford this because we're providing a lot of services, and just our direct costs alone, even if we were doing this all on a volunteer basis, would be out of reach for most poor people living in poverty. And that it's really a question of our insurance system and, you know, what medical care is reimbursed. And we hope to tackle that. We are going to do consultation visits as well, that are just a one-time visit, and that may be covered by insurance, but these comprehensive lifestyle programs at this time are not covered by insurance. So there's a compelling argument that they should be, that, you know, for example, people with HSAs or high deductible plans who are already paying a lot of money in premiums as well as direct costs, there's compelling evidence that if you do change your diet and lifestyle, that you actually save that money, both in drug costs and in future procedures and health care visits and stuff, fairly quickly. So it's a form of insurance all on its own. But yeah, for people who are living in poverty, this is not affordable.
And how about living in poverty, simply trying to, without even going into that kind of a program, trying to make a shift to lifestyle, to eating more of a plant-based diet? Real briefly, we got about 40 seconds. Go ahead, Ed.
RAVS, Rochester Area Vegan Society, has a program that they try to reach out to people that, you know, are poor. So I think that, I'm not sure what their website is, but if you looked up
Rochester Area Vegan Society, RAVS, yep,
yeah, they'd be happy to help you, because one of the things, you can eat healthy and not by not having a lot of money. You just have to plan it better.
Yeah, I take the point. Well, we've covered a lot of ground, and I hope it's the start of a conversation that we will continue with Drs. Tom and Aaron Campbell as they launch this new program. A couple, your first round starts in a couple of weeks, is that right?
Yep, August 11th.
August 11th, that one's filled up, but the late October still has registration available. Though throughout the hour, I don't know if that changed. You'll have to go out and find out. YouAreNutritionAndMedicine.com to find out. The new book is called The Campbell Plan, The Simple Way to Lose Weight and Reverse Illness Using the China Studies Whole Food Plant-Based Diet. Thanks to you both for coming in. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ed,
thank you.
Jim, thanks for your stories. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
And Val LaBanca, thank you as the engineer. Caitlin Madison, the intern for this program. I'm Evan Dawson. Thank you for listening to member-supported public radio.